And welcome to Jazz Vignettes from the Hall. I am Fawn Fritzen. In this special series, music enthusiast Steve Gedrose explores the world of jazz from its roots to the present day. He breaks the fascinating, ever-evolving genre of jazz into easily digestible themes, backed up, of course, with plenty of music examples. In each episode, Steve will introduce you to the musicians who were or are some of the key driving forces behind the evolution of jazz music. We recorded Steve's presentations live at the beautiful Old Fire Hall in downtown Whitehorse, Yukon. Annually, between October and April, Jazz Yukon presents the Jazz in the Hall series, 5 concerts featuring local jazz groups. Each event is opened with a presentation by Steve, where he provides some background about the live music performed that evening. The focus of this episode is the American jazz musician Thelonious Monk. The work of this eccentric composer, pianist, and bandleader is fundamental to the story of modern jazz. With his quirky playing style and unique sense of harmony and melody, Monk's music continues to inspire and challenge jazz artists. This episode looks at several well-known pieces delivered by such remarkable artists as Kevin Mahogany, Carmen McRae, Miles Davis, as well as the Thelonious Monk Quartet featuring John Coltrane and the Thelonious Monk Big Band. Take it away, Steve.
Welcome, everybody. Tonight, I'd like to give a little talk about one of jazz's most talented and eccentric composers and pianists. This is the one and only Thelonious Monk. He's also referred to as the onlyest monk, and that moniker certainly fits. He was an entirely unique individual. I think he arrived on this planet unique and stayed there through the rest of his life. Thelonious Sphere Monk was born in 1917 in Rocky Mount, North Carolina, and passed in 1982 in Weehawken, New Jersey. He was an eccentric but essential character in jazz history. Many musicians, critics, and record producers were very slow to appreciate his unique playing and his offbeat compositions. And for the longest time, he didn't have a record deal. He had very limited work in clubs and things. But through the support of some really important jazz people like tenor saxophone player Coleman Hawkins, drummer and bandleader Art Blakey, the great Miles Davis, and Alfred Lion from the influential Blue Note record label, helped to popularize his music, both by supporting his bands and by recording his tunes themselves. He was called the High Priest of Bop, so he was associated with the bebop movement, but he had a decidedly different approach than the proponents of that style. A lot of his songs are in a medium tempo. Bebop is generally really fast. He didn't play like that. He had really radical ideas about harmony, and he possessed a rhythmic sense that was truly unique. He just had a different internal clock than most folks. That's the best way I can describe it. Contemporary jazz groups are still exploring Monk's body of work all these years later. One of the most remarkable qualities of his music to me is that every time you hear just the first few bars, you know it's a Monk piece. It's really rare in any kind of style of music that they're so instantly recognizable. His ballad, Round Midnight, is one of the most recorded songs in jazz. I have a number of musical examples I'd like to play tonight. The first one is based on one of Monk's probably most romantic pieces. It's a ballad called Ruby, My Dear, which was first recorded in 1947 at a Blue Note session, and that record came out as Genius of Modern Music, Volume 1. It's said that he wrote the tune for a woman that he knew early on. He was married to his wife, Nellie, for, 60 years or something. So this must have been very early on that he met Ruby, because he was a devoted family man for all of his life. He recorded this tune as an instrumental track many times with his quartet through the years. As people began to hear and appreciate Monk's music, many lyricists got involved because, of course, his compositions were just instrumental. So lyricists came along to add words to his tunes. These tunes were given a different title than the original instrumental tunes so as to distinguish them. And the first track I'd like to play is a song called Dear Ruby, as I mentioned, based on the ballad Ruby, My Dear. These lyrics were written by a woman called Sally Swisher, and I think they really capture the emotion of this wistful ballad. It's a beautiful piece. This recording is from an album that his son, Monk's son, T.S. Monk, put together in 1997. He just invited an all-star cast of jazz players and vocalists to come and share the music of Monk in this wonderful CD. And they all said yes. He had nobody decline, I think. And it was the first time that he himself, he's a drummer, the son T.S., had actually played his father's compositions. So this first track is a vocal version called Dear Ruby, sung by baritone jazz vocalist Kevin Mahogany. So track number one, please, Jim.
Ruby, my dear, hold back that tear. I know he's gone. Your love has flown. You're all alone. Oh, I know you cry. There's no reply.
I don't think I mentioned the name of the record. That's Monk on Monk, recorded in 1997. The second track I have is a very famous Monk tune called Epistrophe. It's a jazz standard composed by Thelonious Monk and drummer Kenny Clark in 1942. I should also mention that Monk kind of formed his style very early on in his career. So through the rest of his life, he was just, it was variations on themes that he has established early on. This piece has been called the first classic modern jazz composition. And the A section, or the beginning section, is just a pattern of alternating chords a semitone apart. In this case, it goes from C sharp 7 to D7 back and forth. By 1957, tenor player John Coltrane was achieving a great deal of maturity as a jazz soloist and improviser. This development was aided by his apprenticeship with Thelonious Monk. Coltrane, at this point, for a brief time at least, had left Miles Davis's very successful quintet and started hanging out with Monk. He went over to his apartment and Monk taught him the tunes. Miles didn't ever talk about music, so Coltrane was not getting the input that he needed sometimes. Monk was ready to talk about it all the time, all the time. So they were just super compatible that way. They both shared the intense ability to analyze music, and Coltrane really proved a worthy partner for Monk in this period. They had a very famous gig in the summer of 57 at the Five Spot Club in New York, which was very productive for all involved. It put the club on the jazz map, and it really pushed Coltrane to expand his musical concept. He really was an able soloist to be in Monk's band and deal with these quirky melodies. Later that year in the fall, November 29th, rather, 1957, the Thelonious Monk Quartet featuring John Coltrane played two concerts at the fabled Carnegie Hall in New York. The Voice of America was a radio program that recorded these concerts, but they were never released. It wasn't until February of 2005 that they were rediscovered. There's a fellow called Larry Applebaum that was engaged in a process of digitizing some of these early acetate tapes. He found this rare recording and released it as a CD in 2005. This was a really significant rediscovery. This stuff was just forgotten about for all those years. The group had recorded earlier. There's a live CD from the Five Spot, but the sound quality of these was infinitely better, and the playing is just extraordinary, I think. The liner notes of the reissue also state that the piano at Carnegie Hall was probably the best piano that Monk ever had a chance to play, so that figures in too. So this is musical example number two. This is Epistrophe. Thank you. There's a little piece of Coltrane going wild. So this was originally recorded in 1957, as I mentioned. The next example I have is a tune called Well You Needn't. Been recorded by many, many jazz groups through the years. One of the best known examples is on Miles Davis's Steamin' with the Miles Davis Quintet, recorded on the Prestige label in 1956. The lyrics to this tune were written by a fellow called Mike Farrow, and they are appropriately ironic and funny to fit the tune, which is really a fun tune. It tells the story of a couple's imminent breakup, stating emphatically that indeed it is over now. This version is taken from a really wonderful recording by Carmen McRae, vocalist Carmen McRae. It's called Carmen Sings Monk. And it really is considered one of the best vocal Monk discs that has ever been recorded. She recorded this in 1988, which was just a few years before she retired. I think this was her penultimate recording before she retired in 1991. This particular one features Clifford Jordan on tenor sax. And so number three, Jim, please, It's Over Now.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now. You're dressing with class, well, you needn't. You're holding your sass, well, you needn't. You think you're a gas, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now. It's over now, it's over now. Had your fun, so take a bow. You ought to know you lost the glow. The beat is slow, the shadows grow, the lights are low. It's time to go, let's close the show down. You're taking off weight, well, you needn't. You're looking just great, well, you needn't. You're setting the bait, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.
This fourth example is another Monk composition. It's called I Mean You. And this one was recorded by the Thelonious Monk Big Band in 1963. Monk had two shots at having a big band. I think it was in 1959 he put together the first group, which was a really brassy, bass-heavy sounding band. With this later group, he had Hall Overton work with him to arrange some music for the band. And they changed the configuration. They added a soprano sax. They doubled the number of clarinets that were in the band and added a cornet in an effort to emphasize the high treble range. And it was really a much more successful project. This particular recording was done at Philharmonic Hall at the Lincoln Center in New York. This version demonstrates the really quirky melody that portrays Monk's really playful, whimsical side, which he had in spades, and is backed by the punch of his big band. This one features Thad Jones from the famous Jones Brothers, wonderful jazz musicians all, on cornet. So this is with the big band, I Mean You. Number four, please, Jim.
Thank you.
So you can just hear he's full of funny rhythmic ideas and a lot of dissonance. And at first, everybody thought this was incredibly odd. But after a while, it just became so normal that people really looked out for Monk. That recording was 1963. 1964 was a banner year for him. He had gigs all over the world and was on the cover of Time magazine, which was very significant for any jazz musician at that point. Probably still is, actually. The last example I have is a blues. It's called Straight No Chaser. This particular version was recorded by Miles Davis in 1958. Monk loved the blues, and this is one of his finest. It's basically one phrase that is repeated again and again, each time in a different part of the measure or the bar, and with a different ending. It's kind of like placing accent on a different syllable, you know? It just keeps repeating, and it reflects Monk's genius, I think, to produce a really deep song in a very simple manner, a very simple-sounding melody. This is an ingenious invention set atop a standard 12-bar blues chord progression. This song was used for a wonderful documentary about the life of Thelonious Monk called Thelonious Monk Straight No Chaser that came out in 1988. It's a movie that was produced by Clint Eastwood and directed by Charlotte Zwirin. Features some live performances of his group and posthumous interviews with his friends and family. I can't recommend this enough. It's really quite something to listen to his music, but to see him in action was really incredible. If the band was really swinging and really cooking, he'd just get up from the piano and start dancing around in the most bizarre style. It was really fun. He had this really unusual piano style. Instead of the proper curved fingers that they always teach you when you learn piano, his fingers were just flat, and it was a very percussive style. But he was a very accomplished player. I think it took a while for people to understand that, but certainly through the years, he convinced everyone. So this one is Straight No Chaser. This is the Miles Davis version from his Milestones album. I should have mentioned that classic quintet of Miles Davis featured Cannonball Adderley on alto and the great John Coltrane on tenor. Monk became very withdrawn in his later life. His last recording tour was in 1971 and 72. He made a few appearances in the mid-70s, but spent the rest of his life in seclusion, spending the last 6 years of his life living with Baroness Panonika de Königswarter. She was known as the Jazz Baroness and was a very well-known supporter of jazz musicians and a patron of these players. He had a piano there, but apparently he didn't play it. He was just totally withdrawn. And I read one place, this guy said that he'd played every wrong note there was, so there was really nothing left for him to do. So there's a certain amount of truth in that, I expect. There was a lot of speculation about his mental health in these later years. But most jazz fans are just content to be glad that we have this wonderful music that lives on today. And honestly, you hear it just about every jazz group you'll hear. So that's just a thumbnail sketch of the great Thelonious Monk. Thank you.
You've been listening to the seventh installment of Jazz Vignettes from the Hall, titled Thelonious Monk. We recorded this episode in February 2012. Now here's an extra treat to take us out. From a 1957 live performance in Carnegie Hall, the Thelonious Monk Quartet with John Coltrane play an extended version of Sweet and Lovely. This tune, composed by Jerry Mulligan and Thelonious Monk, features Monk's Sweet and Lovely piano and Coltrane's lively saxophone. This program was made possible by Jazz Yukon. Jazz Yukon is a volunteer organization that promotes and presents jazz in the Yukon through an annual integrated program of live jazz presentations and jazz education outreach. This episode was researched, written, and presented live by Steve Gedros. Live recording by Jim Holland. Dieter Gade is our producer, and I am Fawn Fritzen. Thanks for being here.